everyone. Welcome back to the Turbo Time podcast. I'm your host, Alyssa Maripodi, the managing editor of Turbo Machinery International. And welcome back to our Mythbusters, Klaus Brunn and Rainer Kurtz. Thanks for both being here today.
Thank you very much, Alyssa, for having us again. Looking forward to today's podcast.
Yeah, and I really enjoy these discussions, so I'm really eager to continue these.
So today's topic is going to be a two-parter. We're going to talk about the various types of compressor drivers, from gas and steam turbines to gearboxes and electric motors. And we'll be kind of just taking a deep dive into each of them over the next couple episodes, including their advantages and disadvantages, their optimal applications, and so on. So today, let's just start by talking about the various types of compressor drivers, if you can just kind of break those out, and then the applications that they're used for.
Well, let me start with this, Alyssa. Obviously, we need to look at, you know, what is a compressor? A compressor is used to compress a gas. And obviously, that's a machine that requires some kind of driver that puts energy into the compressor. So you need a device that the compressor wants to run at a certain speed, and it wants to require a certain power. And so you have to have some kind of input device. And you can start dividing these by application, by fuel source or power source available, and so on. And before going into oversimplification, the way to kind of dig down in it is maybe to start with saying, okay, what is the compressor in the first place? So if it's, let's say, a centrifugal compressor, you probably want something that spins, right? An electric motor drive, a gas turbine, a steam turbine, something like this. If you're driving a reciprocating compressor, you most likely would like something like an engine that also reciprocates, because that tends to match a little better. But you can also use an electric motor, and you could theoretically use the other drivers too, but that's not very common. Once you have done that, then it really becomes a question, before you get into the technical stuff, as to what is available to you as your fuel. Let's say you are running a compressor, a centrifugal compressor, on a pipeline, a natural gas pipeline. Then the obvious choice is that you have natural gas as a fuel available for your driver, and so you would use a device that can burn natural gas as a fuel, and that's typically a gas turbine. Similarly, if you're in a refinery or some kind of petrochemical application, where you have a lot of steam available because you have boilers and other processes require steam, then you very often select a steam turbine as your driver for your compressor. And then in many cases, because electricity is available or there are some other restrictions that keep you from running a gas turbine or a steam turbine, you choose an electric motor drive. And they have advantages and disadvantages, but you always have to remember that an electric motor drive does require quite a bit of electric power. So these are kind of sort of your options. You have steam turbines, gas turbines, engines for typically only used for recip motors, and electric motors. And there's probably some others, but that makes up probably 99.9% of the possible driver for compressors.
Thanks, Klaus, for the outline. So let's go into the individual machines, and I'll start out with gas turbines. Klaus pointed that out already. What you ideally want is that your driver runs at the same speed as your compressor, so that you don't have to put a gearbox between the two. And in many applications, actually, gas turbines work quite well with centrifugal compressors, whereas a lot of other drivers, including electric motors and in particular reciprocating machines, would need a fairly sizable gearbox. Now, the working principle of a gas turbine is such that you first compress air, then you inject fuel and burn the fuel, and then that hot exhaust gas drives a turbine section that does actually two things. One is it provides the power for this air compressor, and the other thing, it provides power for the driven equipment. And for modern compressor drives, you will find what's typically referred to as a two-shaft gas turbine, which is a gas turbine that actually uses these exhaust gases to drive what's called a power turbine that allows a large variation in output speeds, which is very beneficial for operating compressors, because essentially speed variations is probably the most efficient and most effective method to adapt a centrifugal compressor to different operating conditions.
One of the things I kind of forgot to mention about this, and Rainer is perfectly right about this. When you look at the application, it is not just speed and power, it is really also operating range. There are some applications, possibly petrochemical kind of application, but running at a fixed speed is perfectly fine. But the majority of applications, you don't just want to run at one point. You have to have operating range for your driver, because your compressor wants to run over an operating range so it can run the most efficient for the particular applications. And we haven't gotten into applications yet. There's upstream, midstream, downstream, and a lot of kind of stuff. We'll probably get into that later. But almost all of them require some kind of variable speed drive. And that, as Ryan nicely pointed out, on a gas turbine can be achieved with a two-shaft gas turbine using a power turbine. Similarly, on a steam turbine, I'll talk about steam turbines later, can also be achieved because steam turbines do have variable speed range. It is now a little harder on an electric motor because you need a variable frequency drive for that. We'll talk about that probably later. But it is something that is critically important to consider, not just the application and not just consider the power requirement, but also the operating speed range that you need.
Yeah, and I mean the neat thing about gas turbines, and Klaus pointed it out, is that you can often run them at with fuel that's already available. If you have a compressor in a pipeline application, the pipeline transports natural gas, then that's a fuel for a gas turbine. If you're offshore in an oil field on ga or gas field, there are often hydrocarbons in gaseous forms that you can use as the fuel for a gas turbine. There are often byproducts from other processes, for example, coke oven gas, that actually can serve as fuel of a gas turbine. You can also run them on liquid fuel. The only problem is liquid fuels are usually relatively expensive. From an operational standpoint, it's very convenient, especially if you're in remote areas, that your fuel is basically already there and you don't have to go through great efforts to specifically bring the fuel for your driver to that site. The other thing is also, and that's in particular an issue when you get into more remote areas, gas turbines have a very high power density. So for a given amount of weight, you get far more power out of a gas turbine than for pretty much any other drivers. The aircraft guys make use of that, but on the industrial side, it's also very helpful if you can actually easily transport and exchange these gas turbine engines. Especially if you're in remote locations.
Yeah. So gas turbines have really, really come along nicely over, I mean, basically since World War II, but even before then, gas turbine technology, as its the core technology existed. And they have really made up the vast majority of compressor drivers in the midstream and even in the upstream section over the last 50 or 60 years. Now, steam turbines are much older technology. They've been ship-mounted for propulsion for way before gas turbines, and they tend to be bigger, have a larger footprint, be weightier, and so they're usually only used for compressor drives when there is a compelling reason for using a steam turbine, and that is typically only the case when you already have steam available, and that is typically only the case if you're in a large plant that needs steam for some other reason. So we see steam turbine application or steam turbine driven compressors, as I mentioned before, in petrochemical plants, refineries, sometimes in power plants as an auxiliary drive or something like that. But it is not common to see a steam turbine driver on something like a pipeline because you usually don't have any steam available there, and it really doesn't make sense. Having said that, steam turbines from an operational perspective offer some of the similar advantages of a gas turbine in that you have variable speed and you have pretty good control of your speed and power for a centrifugal compressor drive, and you can also usually match your compressor drive speed requirements without a gearbox. That's not always the case, but that's not always the case for a gas turbine either. But in many cases, you can run a steam turbine fast enough for large industrial compressor applications up to 100 megawatt or so to match the speed of the compressor. And so you have a direct drive. And that's actually something to consider as and we've been talking about drivers and we've kind of mentioned gearboxes and the avoidance of gearboxes. It's important to recognize that sometimes you don't just drive one compressor, you drive a compressor and a gearbox and another compressor or multiple compressors. And in some cases, you even have multiple drivers. You could have a gas turbine and a steam turbine, or gas turbine and electric motors, and these things are called dual drive. We'll probably talk about that a little bit later, but it's worth mentioning it. Back to steam turbines, as I mentioned, they're not that commonly used in pipeline or upstream applications. And the other thing we're currently seeing quite a bit is, and that also applies for steam, for gas turbines, is that we're seeing some tendency toward replacement of these machines for CO2 emissions reductions reasons with electric motors. There are some issues with electric motors. So, and maybe Rainer, you want to start talking about electric motors, and then I can talk about electric motors.
Yeah, actually, before we get to electric motors, I just want to grab a topic that we sort of touched on a few times. In most industries, one of the key and often most important features of a turbo machinery driver is its reliability. And that is really something where both steam turbines and gas turbines and electric motors, for that matter, have excellent records on being available, having a very high availability and reliability. In fact, actually, on electric motors, the one of the key problems is not so much the motor itself, but the reliability of the power supply for that motor. And that gets us to electric motors. The first fundamental statement is a centrifugal compressor doesn't care whether it's driven by a gas turbine, a steam turbine, or a electric motor. However, there are the sort of the standard electric motor that you can buy is inherently a constant speed machine. Especially in the motor size that we're talking about. So I'm not talking about the small DC motors that you sometimes find in domestic applications. So the key differentiator is, or the key question is, how do I make an inherently constant speed machine into a variable speed machine? And there are really in the industrial world two different concepts. You either change the supply frequency to the motor, and the supply frequency changes or directly determines the motor speed. And that is done with what's called a variable frequency drive. The other way is that you use a variable speed gearbox, which is also used in the industry. So you have a constant speed input into the gearbox and you get a variable speed output from the gearbox. I cannot emphasize that enough. Electric motors have an extremely high reliability in and by themselves, but the reliability of an electric motor, and recent history has shown that a few times in North America, is really strongly dependent on do I get electricity to the site where I want to run that motor.
Yeah. And that's really important on the electric motor side because that means you really have to have some built-in redundancy in your electric supply system. And when we're talking about the electric supply system, that's not just the electric power coming from your high voltage line. It's also your substation, transformers, switch gears, the VFD itself. All of these pieces of equipment are not quite as reliable as the electric motor itself. Electric motors have been around, as Rainer mentioned, since a long time, 100 something years. But VFDs, variable frequency drives, really have not been around that long. They do generate heat. There are certain types of what I would call wear parts in them that will fail after a certain number of years. And because they are somewhat more novel to the industry, and when I say more novel, we're talking the last 25 years or so to our industry, there still tend to be a lack of understanding on how a VFD really properly operates, sometimes on the operator basis. But they are becoming somewhat of the standard for many applications, and they're very often the only solution if you are constrained on, let's say, carbon emissions when you're not allowed to put in a gas turbine or a steam turbine because you're creating or you're burning a fossil fuel and you're not allowed to do that. They really tend to be the only solution. In that case, do not get fooled by the claim that they have a small footprint because they don't. Because if you look at all the electric claptrap that you have to install to run an electric motor, it's just as big as a gas turbine or a steam turbine. And do not really get fooled by the reliability numbers because, as Rainer mentioned, the electric supply to the motor itself has to be highly reliable. Otherwise, you're not going to be running reliably. But we are seeing, because of political pressures, we're seeing quite a few conversions of fossil fueled fired machines to electric motors. And so that is becoming more the standard. When installing electric motors, there is a whole set of electric requirements that most mechanical engineers, such as me, for example, are not really familiar with. We're not electrical engineers. For us, all this electrical stuff is a little bit voodoo. When they talk about electrons, I think of little ping pong balls going around a pipeline. And that's not really what happens. But when you do install a VFD, there are some guidelines out there that give you some information as to what you need to worry about, such as torque ripples and harmonics in the system and all that kind of stuff, and startup current, inrush current, all these things. But there are some industry guidelines available that one should probably consult before installing an electric motor.
Klaus also brought up briefly the question of emissions. And yes, ultimately, steam turbines and gas turbines rely on fossil fuels. But in that discussion, we cannot neglect the fact that the electricity that our electric motors run from is usually also created by or often created by fossil fuel fired plants. So in this discussion, you usually have to take into account the essentially the CO2 emissions that you carry with your electricity. However, once you take that into account, then indeed electric motors do not generate carbon emissions.
In all the industrialized world, most electricity comes still from fossil fuel power plants. So the conception that yes, you're eliminating a point source of carbon emissions is somewhat of a fallacy in the sense that you're really just shifting the carbon emissions from one point to another when your electricity is produced by a very dirty coal power plant, as is the case in most of Europe, most of China, and a lot of the United States. And so you're not really helping yourself from a net carbon footprint perspective, but it probably helps the operator in getting the permits a little easier. One last point I would like to make about electric motors before we move on that topic is that, as Rainer mentioned, electric motors tend to come at a certain speed that tends to be in the 60 hertz range, let's say 1800 RPM, 3600 RPM. And in the 50 hertz range, it's 1500 and 3000 RPM. Those speeds usually do not match that which is required for a compressor drive, which wants to run much, much, much faster. And so, for almost all electric motor drive application, a gearbox will be needed. It's nothing inherently wrong with the gearbox. We'll talk about that probably a little more, but gearboxes are another mechanical component that has losses, does require a lube oil system, does tend to be a little less reliable than some of the other components of your compressor drive. And so it's something that is an added factor to consider when worrying about electric motors.
One quick remark also on again on emissions. A lot of steam turbines actually use as a fuel stuff that normally would go to waste. So in that sense, a steam turbine is one of your ultimate methods to actually recover energy out of essentially waste heat. The other thing, a point that I want to make on emissions is that currently everybody talks about CO2 emissions, but in the 80s, 90s, and 2000s, a much bigger issue was the emission of other byproducts of combustions, NOx and carbon monoxide and things like that. And for example, in that area, the industry has made huge strides to go from to actually reducing these emissions, not just a little bit, but by orders of magnitude between the 90s and what we have today.
Okay, I feel like your first answer was so comprehensive that we could end it here. But it's okay. So we'll just kind of drill down a little bit more into some of the stuff that you guys said, and then we'll definitely get a little more into the gearboxes. So maybe you can talk about matching a driver to a compressor and kind of when specifying a type of driver, the main technical and operational considerations.
Yeah, so we already mentioned that you obviously have to match your power and your speed. And that's not just for a single point of operation, but that's for an operating range, both in power and in speed. That's kind of just the most basic technical requirements. But then you get really into the application. We mentioned that, for example, on a pipeline, you have a gas turbine driver because you have natural gas available. And so there is good match. If you can avoid a gearbox, then you also have a good match. Then in certain industry, there is a, probably a little bit more knowledge of one type of driver over others, right? If you go, as I said before, refineries, you probably the folks are more familiar with a steam turbine than with an electric motor, and so you see a preference for that. So those are kind of sort of the critical driver matching requirements for a compressor. It sounds relatively easy, but when you really have to look at matching that speed and that power over a certain operating range, it's not, because every driver has its own speed limits. They can only run as fast as the mechanic limits are. And on a gas turbine, they can only run as hot as a certain limit is. And so that limits your power or your speed. And on the steam turbine, the same kind of thing. There's only so much steam, so much heat you can run through the machine, so that limits you. And then on the lower side, you're also limited by the critical speeds of these are rotating machines, and so you're limited by the critical speed of those machines. You want to try to make sure that your driver is not limiting your compressor to run over the operating that it wants to see. So you don't want your driver to limit your compressor; rather, you want the compressor to be the limiting thing. But that's not always possible.
I mean, if you talk about selecting equipment, at the beginning stands the process. You don't buy yourself a gas turbine or a compressor because you really like to have one. You basically have a true process need. It might be in a pipeline that you have to compress a certain amount of gas from a certain pressure to another pressure. That might be in a petrochemical plant that you have to drive a compressor that moves certain process fluids. That might be a compressor in gas gathering that brings gas from the well to a higher pressure. So at the beginning stands the process. And that drives two things. One of it drives the preference for a certain driver, because if you don't have a fuel, then you can't use a gas turbine. If you don't have electricity, electric motors are a bit of a hard sell, unless you want to put yourself a power plant on your compressor side. So that's one choice. Then the other, but then it really comes down that your process determines how the compressor is supposed to look like. Now, when we design compressors, we have a lot of choices with regards to how many, what pressure ratio we can achieve, how fast we run them, but it's all within the design limits of machines. So then you can try to match your compressor speed to the speed that the drivers have for the given power range that you need for the compressor. Both gas turbines and steam turbines, The bigger they get in terms of power production, the slower they run. Fortunately, centrifugal compressors tend to do the same thing. The bigger they get, the more power they consume, the slower they run. With electric motors, again, you're stuck with these 1800 RPM or 3600 RPM. So that then really drives follow-on decisions. Can I find that speed match, or do I need a gearbox?
Yeah, so we've seen, for example, over the last 20 years, quite a push, as I mentioned before, toward electrification, which means you're putting electric motors in, and sometimes to the point of it being ridiculous, right? I mean, in the 90s, we saw quite a bit of electrification of offshore platforms, where what's usually being utilized is a gas-driven driver for most compressors. In the past, there was a discussion, okay, we're going to put in electric motors drives, and that's been done and successfully done. But if you look at the overall history of that over the last 20 years or so, what you've really seen is, okay, we put in electric motors so we avoid a gas turbine because then we don't take up much less space. Well, now you need a gearbox because you need to match the speed of your compressor. Okay, so you need a lube oil system. Okay, nothing new there. Well, now you need your electrical switchgear, you need your transformers, you need your VFD. All of that takes up space. Then the next question is, okay, where's the electricity come from? Well, maybe we're just going to put a bunch of gas turbines on the platform to make power. And so you're back to gas turbines, right? And if you look at some of these projects and platforms that were built, where you look at the overall footprint, there was no footprint reduction because they went electric. There was actually weight and footprint increase because they had to add all that electrical stuff that they didn't think about really as profoundly as they should be. Now we're seeing similar trends now in refineries, where steam turbines are being replaced as drivers for compressors. With electric motors. And then the question becomes always, okay, well, we have now all the steam available because most refineries have been around for many, many years and they're not going to downsize the boiler. And they say, well, maybe we put in a steam turbine to make some power and we can use that power to drive an electric motor to run the compressor. And that seems to be somewhat of a roundabout way to get to where you want to go. So there is, in the name of electrification, there's quite a bit of weird things that are happening. Not all of them are bad, but sometimes from an engineering perspective, one should ponder that a little further than what's actually being done.
Okay, that concludes part one of our TurboTime podcast on compressor drivers. Thank you to Klaus and Rainer for talking with me today, and thank you to our audience for tuning in. And we will see you next time in part two.